This is Liberation Radio.
Capitalism needs poverty.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
Whatever we could do, we're gonna do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth.
Each week, we bring you interviews, commentary, analysis, political developments, and struggles affecting workers throughout the country as a way to build the movement for socialism in the United States.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The only thing that will ever defeat racism will be the defeat of its parents, capitalism and imperialism.
Without smashing mass incarceration, working people of all nationalities cannot have justice.
Liberation Radio is brought to you by the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Welcome to Liberation Radio. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. This episode is dedicated to International Women's Day, which is March 8th. On this show, we'll talk about the history of IWD, the current state of the women's liberation struggle, and some concrete steps we need to take for real liberation.
March 8th is International Women's Day. The first was proposed in 1910 by Clara Zetkin at the Second International Conference of Working Women. It is a day of international solidarity and a day for reviewing the strength and organization of working class women. The 100-year-plus old holiday is a day of global celebration of the economic, political, and social achievements of women and a reminder of the ongoing struggle for women's rights. Throughout the history of class society, women have been oppressed. Their lives and interests have been subjugated by the ownership of private property and the thirst of the ruling class to increase profits and maintain domination. But it hasn't always been this way, and it won't always be this way. As long as women have been oppressed, there has been vibrant struggle to combat this oppression. Women in the United States have made substantial gains in the past 100 years. Through struggle, women conquered the right to vote. They have made great strides towards securing equal pay, the right to abortion and control of their bodies, and more. They have engaged in fierce labor struggles, anti-racist struggles, and the fight for same-sex marriages. The vast majority of human history, archaeological and anthropological research indicates that women were not specially oppressed as women. Women and men have done different work in early human society based on the demands of childbearing, but all people were valued for their contributions to the survival of the group. Women were held in the highest esteem. The oppression of women arose with the emergence of private property and the parallel development of the first-class societies, those based on slavery. Under these systems, women became the property of their husbands in the same way that slaves were the property of their owners. Women enslaved and free became valued for the children they produced and the free work they did, not for their intrinsic value as human beings. Women's oppression has changed over time, along with the mode of economic exploitation, with slavery giving way to feudalism and feudalism to capitalism. Capitalist production needs the employment of male and female laborers. Ever-changing technology has made differences in physical strength between men and women increasingly irrelevant. Since the inception of capitalism, working-class women have been drawn out of the isolated atmosphere of the home and brought into collective production. Some of the earliest factory workers were women. They operated automatic looms or made clothing. More women entered the workforce, but they are paid less than men. The capitalist system profits directly from sexism. Owners can realize super profits by paying women less than men for work of equal value. On average, a woman in the United States earns about 75 cents to every dollar that a man earns for the same work. The wage gap is widest for women of color, dipping below 50 cents to each dollar that white men earn in the United States today. Globally, women earn, on average, about half of what men earn. Capitalists also profit indirectly from the unpaid labor of women in the home to maintain and reproduce the working class. Women have played an important role in the labor movement. In fact, in 1910, the Socialist International established International Women's Day to commemorate a March 8, 1857 protest staged by women from clothing and textile factories in New York City. The garment workers, who were struggling against very poor conditions and low wages, were attacked and dispersed by the police. Those women established their first labor union in the same month 2 years later. In 1880, a low-paid, mostly female workforce of shoe workers in Lynn, Massachusetts, initiated one of the first successful strikes in the United States. During the Detroit sit-down strikes in the 1930s, women handed food through the windows of auto factories to the striking men inside. Women immigrant farm workers struggled for contracts in the 1960s and 1970s. Women's participation in the labor movement is more prevalent now than ever. Around 425,000 women joined the U.S. labor movement between 1997 and 2001. Today, women are 42% of all union members and 46% of the entire U.S. workforce. Those percentages are growing every year. This system profits from the super exploitation of women all around the globe. Discrimination, denial of access to resources, and the acceptance of gender-based violence are all attempts to keep women from organizing and asserting their rights. Socialist society can codify equality between men and women into law. It is a starting place for true equality. Cuba has made important strides in attempting to eliminate sexism. The Constitution outlaws discrimination based on gender, race, or sexual orientation. Reproductive rights are guaranteed. Women have access to contraceptives and abortion. They have access to top quality prenatal care as well as maternity leave. Cuba's infant mortality rate is lower than the rate in the United States. All Cubans have access to education, and the majority of doctors, teachers, researchers, and scientists are women. Women are 47% of the workforce. Socialists stand with the most determined fighters for women's rights in every battle. Whether for equal rights, reproductive rights, maternity benefits, or paid parental leave as essential components in the class struggle. Eliminating the capitalist market and guaranteeing all workers their basic rights to a job, healthcare, housing, and education lay the foundation for ending sexism and women's oppression. But the struggle to end sexism, male chauvinism, and inequality will not happen overnight. It will require a profound commitment of a revolutionary leadership to overcome all vestiges of the past. This will be a struggle that will last generations, even after a socialist revolution.
To talk about the state of the women's liberation struggle, we have on Elizabeth Perez. She's a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation and an organizer with WORD, Women Organized to Resist and Defend. Going into International Women's Day 2015 seems bittersweet. On the one hand, we celebrate the struggle women have been waging for literally thousands of years for equality. On the other, here in the U.S., women continue to face a hostile sexist culture. What are your general thoughts going into this year's celebration of International Women's Day?
International Women's Day is, for me, a very significant day that unfortunately isn't celebrated here in the United States. For more than over 100 years, different parts of the world celebrate this day, commemorating women and the work that they've done, you know, to keep the struggle forward for equality, for women's rights. And we've seen, you know, from its inception after the tragic Triangle Fire, women have been out in the streets to demand equal pay, equal rights, the right to vote, the right to choose if and when they want to have a family. So we have seen that while we continue to fight for equality, that we still have not been able to achieve full political, social, and economic equality for women.
So in last year, 16 states enacted anti-choice measures, yet 7 in 10 Americans are pro-choice. What do you think accounts for these kind of discrepancies?
The right wing has been very strategic in terms of going after some of the southern and midwestern states where they can gradually chip away the right to choose or limit the funding to make clinics and access to contraception available to women. The last couple of years, I would say over the last 3 to 4 years, they've been going really hard in trying to get these laws passed at the state level, going against Roe v. Wade, which is more damage that's been done from the previous decade in terms of just anti-choice laws that have been generated. So it's very important that we continue to combat just the right-wing propaganda. It's not just the politicians, but also the right-wing groups that fund these politicians. While most of America could be pro-choice, if you keep attacking the women's right to choose at the local state level, it's chipping away at the larger, you know, national victories that have been won.
Right. And the poverty rate for women is about 3 times higher than men. This points to intricate relationships between class and gender equalities. Could you speak more about this?
It doesn't really surprise me at all, given that in 2014 and even today, women are still paid less than men for the same work. When in fact, Latino women are paid 55% of what a man earns, and Black women 67%, and white women 78%. We're already seeing just a disparity with regards to income. For the same work that a man can do, a woman gets paid significantly less. And in addition to that, all of the social programs that are constantly being under attack and being either defunded or significantly cut impact women, such as WIC, as well as any welfare programs or any housing assistance programs, which definitely creates a larger income inequality between men and women.
And what do you think are some of the most notable struggles that have gone on in the past year in terms of women's liberation and the fight for equality?
Over the last year, there's been a lot of momentum to combat reactionary politicians and small groups that are attacking reproductive rights. One example that comes to mind is the Hobby Lobby Supreme Court decision, which gave the owners of the store religious convictions to be viewed more important than those of the reproductive rights of women who work there. That's just one example of something that, you know, was being organized against throughout the country. In addition to that, just the multiple legislation that's being passed on that anti-choice that align to that as well. Marissa Alexander is another example, just highlighting the contradiction where we see that victims of abuse are, you know, being punished for defending themselves. And in Marissa's case, for shooting a warning shot into the ceiling, she was at risk of 20-year sentencing. Just for trying to defend herself and her children against her abusive ex-husband. But due to the growing momentum out in the streets and people organizing in defense to have Marissa's charges dropped, she was able to take, you know, a shorter, settled sentence, just taking a deal to fulfill a couple of more months in jail rather than risking continuing to be incarcerated for a crime that she didn't even commit.
So what will it take to really achieve true women's equality?
So in order to achieve true women's equality, we have to continue to fight against the social, political, and economic attacks on women's rights. In addition to that, I think it's important that we understand the origins of women's oppression, which stems from the introduction of private property and women becoming property of their husbands, primarily due to the ability to produce children and also the labor that women do at the home that is viewed as free labor that isn't accounted for. It isn't equal work or work that is valued monetarily. So I think that that's something that we have to keep in mind. But we also have to understand that women weren't always oppressed throughout history. There were primitive societies where women were highly regarded within the society and everyone worked collectively together rather than women just staying at home with the children. It was a responsibility of the community to take care of children and women being involved in all aspects of society. I think that it's also... But the treatment of women is definitely a direct reflection of society and where it stands. And currently here in the U.S., we live in a society where we don't guarantee full rights to women or equal pay or even allow women to have control over our own bodies. But that isn't the case in other societies. Like, Cuba is definitely an example of a society which has made very important strides to help eliminate sexism. And you can see that with the introduction of constitutional laws that ban any gender, race, or sexual orientation discrimination, as well as the guarantee of reproductive rights. In addition to that, Cuba has introduced a family code, which makes it mandatory for both men and women to be involved in the childbearing and home responsibilities so that it doesn't end up being a burden just on the women, basically eliminating the concept of just women's work. And in addition to that, you can see that women play a significant part in the Cuban workforce, with about 50% of the workforce being comprised of women, which is, a majority of the teachers, researchers, and scientists are women. So that's something great to see and something that we want to aspire to one day have here in the U.S. So ultimately, I think that, the way that we can achieve full equality for all, as well as the liberation of women, is to continue to be out in the streets to fight against these attacks. We have Cuba as a shining example of what society can look like. And, we've seen that while we have, as women, gained rights throughout the decades, those rights aren't going to be always guaranteed. And it's something that we have to continue to fight for. And while we've gained legal victories, we have to maintain momentum out in the streets to keep fighting any ongoing attacks on all of the gains that women have made.
We're in the middle of a revolution, because I see the face of things to come. Oh, your constitution, well, my friend, it's gonna have to...
My name is Asada Shakur, and I was born and raised in the United States. I am a descendant of Africans who were kidnapped and brought to the Americas as slaves. I spent my early childhood in the racist, segregated South. I later moved to the northern part of the country, where I realized that black people were equally victimized by racism and oppression. I grew up and became a political activist, participating in student struggles, the anti-war movement, and most of all, in the movement for the liberation of African Americans in the United States. I later joined the Black Panther Party, an organization that was targeted by the COINTELPRO program, a program that was set up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to eliminate all political opposition to the U.S. government's policies, to destroy the black liberation movement in the United States, to discredit activists, and to eliminate potential leaders. Under the COINTELPRO program, many political activists were harassed, imprisoned, murdered, or otherwise neutralized. As a result of being targeted by COINTELPRO, I, like many other young people, was faced with the threat of prison, underground, exile, or death. The FBI, with the help of local police agencies, systematically fed false accusations and fake news articles to the press, accusing me and other activists of crimes we did not commit. Although in my case the charges were eventually dropped or I was eventually acquitted, the national and local police agencies created a situation where, based on their false accusations against me, any police officer could shoot me on sight. It was not until the Freedom of Information Act was passed in the mid-70s that we began to see the scope of the United States government's persecution of political activists. At this point, I think that it is important to make one thing very clear. I have advocated and I still advocate revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty. To make a long story short, I was captured in New Jersey in 1973 after being shot with both arms held in the air and then shot again from the back. I was left on the ground to die, and when I did not, I was taken to a local hospital where I was threatened, beaten, and tortured. In 1977, I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. In 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. The New Jersey State Police and other law enforcement officials say they want to see me brought to justice. But I would like to know what they mean by justice. Is torture justice? I was kept in solitary confinement for more than 2 years, mostly in men's prisons. Is that justice? My lawyers were threatened with imprisonment and imprisoned. Is that justice? I was tried by an all-white jury without even the pretext of impartiality and then sentenced to life in prison plus 33 years. Is that justice? Let me emphasize that justice for me is not the issue I am addressing here. It is justice for my people that is at stake. When my people receive justice, I am sure that I will receive it too.
The Sacramento police have outrageously charged Answer Coalition activist Miley Hampton, a young black woman, with the felony lynching. After holding her initially on $100,000 bail, Miley is now out of jail but faces the threat of 4 years in prison on the charges. But we're fighting back. Miley's first court appearance is set for Monday, March 16th at 10:30 a.m. at the Sacramento County Courthouse, 720 9th Street, Department 8, 2nd floor. Join us to show support. We demand that all charges against Miley be immediately dropped. We demand an end to the repression of the Black Lives Matter movement. We demand an end to police brutality and the war against black and brown youth. As the famous slogan of the Black Lives Matter movement correctly stated, the whole system is guilty. This reality holds from this case to the cops who killed Mike Brown and Eric Garner to the legal system and politicians who sanctioned this violence. This is the historical reality of the United States, a country that was built on the extreme brutality of slavery, indigenous genocide, racism, misogyny, and homophobia. This is the country whose police today are charging a young black woman with lynching. Lynching is what mobs of white racists committed against thousands of black people in the United States. They took black people from the custody of the police with the tacit consent of the cops and state. The mobs then beat, mutilated, tortured, and hung them. This ironic plot to charge an anti-racist black protester with lynching screams arrogance on the part of the cops and the DA. The people see through these charges. We charge a state with lynching. We charge a state with attempting to lynch the Black Lives Matter movement. The police and the county DA falsely claim that Miley is guilty of obstructing justice and removing a person from police custody, lynching under Californian law. In fact, it is the police who are guilty of obstructing justice, in this case and historically. These charges against Miley are in reality revenge charges against leading activists of the Black Lives Matter movement. We in the Answer Coalition, along with a wide network of endorsing organizations, are mobilizing to fight back against police repression. The story that the police and DA present is entirely different from the facts of what actually happened. In reality, on January 18th, a peaceful march was disrupted by violent police who wanted to shut it down because of its political content. The police violated the protesters' rights to free speech and arrested several people. The police were the aggressors, not the activists. The police obstructed justice, not the protesters. The state wants to repress the movement sparked by the killing of Mike Brown and the heroic uprising of the people in Ferguson, Missouri. They want to repress this movement because it has swept the country, awakening the mainstream to what's being described as the war against black and brown youth. From the killer cops to the school-to-prison pipeline, to the deportations, to gentrification and poverty, we are seeing the disenfranchisement of a generation. The Black Lives Matter movement was speaking about these truths. It embarrassed the state, which must deny reality and cling to cliche phrases about freedom and democracy. While the police attempt to disrupt the movement in part by singling out activists like Miley, we must continue the struggle. We must support our sisters and brothers in the crosshairs of the American legal system. We must continue to protest in the streets against police brutality and against all forms of racism. The movement cannot be extinguished. We invite all people to unite with us in this movement, to support Miley in her legal defense, and to join us in resistance until racism is finally eradicated. Free Miley Hampton and end police repression of the Black Lives Matters movement. That's all for Liberation Radio. I'm Sean Garcia. Please remember this program is available free for broadcast by community and public radio stations. You can encourage your local radio station to air Liberation Radio. They can visit liberationradio.org for details. Tune in next week for more from the struggle for justice.
You have been listening to Liberation Radio, a weekly program from the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You can find us online at liberationradio.org to listen to past shows and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Some of what you heard during this program are Creative Commons licensed compositions. Our theme music and some music segments were performed by Six Fingers and used with permission of the artists. Liberation Radio is produced by the Party for Socialism and Liberation to help build the struggle for socialism in the United States. The PSL is a party of activists and organizers. We are in the streets at the demonstrations and picket lines, opposing cutbacks and attacks on workers, standing up to police brutality, fighting for immigrant rights, and struggling against racism, sexism, homophobia, and all forms of bigotry. We stand in solidarity with oppressed peoples around the world resisting imperialism. We believe the crimes of capitalism call for a new kind of society, and we are committed to fighting for it. To find a PSL branch near you, see our upcoming events and learn more about how you can get involved. PSLweb.org. Again, that's PSLweb.org. Also, the PSL's Liberation newspaper online at liberationnews.org, where you can read our news articles and analysis or purchase a subscription to the print edition. Thank you for listening.